And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
The reality is this team was limited. I think the future of the program is bright. Development, strength and conditioning, and Jeremiah Tillman, you have to capitalize with Sophie at this point. You got to build around her. I want them to really look at trying to drive the needle to host.
So Graceland has brought their pastor.
That's correct.
Go Graceland tonight.
Harley!
Steps to his right, three in the air,
he got it!
Marcus Morris hit the three!
We've got a lot of fight.
Harden's been tremendous, it's stepping back.
Woo! A loose puck and a save made by Marcus Morris! Score! Tomas Tatar on the second chance!
This time of the year, you can't give teams free offense.
You know, they reached out within 5-10 minutes of the news hitting the wire. And
why don't we use that platform to put it on some of the problems that affect the communities that we were recruited from?
I feel free to speak as I want. Obviously, the 49ers have been open to allowing their players the freedom to express themselves on this platform.
That's in deep center field, all the way back and up onto the grass.
Well, I think he's got another one.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Closers. Jay Sparks here, and we are joined, as always, after we go through a little montage talk here, we are joined by Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. Bill, how you doing today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. The Graceland Yellow Jackets take the NAIA Div 1 men's basketball title, and the Freed Hardeman Lions take the women's title as those two tournaments wrap up in NAIA basketball spectacular in Kansas City and Billings, Montana. We also got some basketball in there from NBA and hockey highlights as well. So we will get all that information to you. You know, it's more important to get to Bill Conley right now, Rock M Nation, and Bill, as you look around the landscape right now, this is a Sweet 16 that seems not like anybody drew it up.
A little bit. We've lost at what, 2-1 seeds, 2-2 seeds, 2-3 seeds, most of the fours. But I mean, this is also kind of what we were told was going to happen halfway through the year, and when everybody stepping back and realized, wow, there are like three good teams this year, and everybody else is a big mishmash. And then one of those really good teams was Virginia, who just decided to make history last week. So yeah, I guess in that sense, you know, we were dealing with a situation where the odds of something crazy like this weren't all that bad, and now we're seeing it in its entirety.
Yeah, and you know, the stories are interesting, and the teams are great, and you know, it's just I the only problem I see right now is you know, the matchups to me aren't necessarily as compelling, and I don't know. I sometimes like the Cinderella matchups. It's not even the fact that I don't know anything about the Cinderellas, as some people say later on in the tourney when somebody makes a deep run. But you know, the matchups don't sing out to me this time like they have in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly got some. It's hard to get excited about Duke Syracuse, you know, and you know, Kentucky, Kansas State or something like that. But there are still, I mean, there are stories, even if the matchups are a little weird, the stories are really interesting. Kentucky kind of so slowly becoming what they became. And then suddenly, you know, the last week or two of the regular season becoming Kentucky. Obviously everything about the Loyola story is fascinating and fun, but you've got Florida State, Leonard Hamilton making a run at 69 years old. You've got Gonzaga in a very good spot to make another Final Four run. You've got Michigan playing really, really hot. Texas A&M is an interesting team. I mean, in terms of matchups, though, I am very excited about Villanova-West Virginia. I'm not excited in that Villanova is the team I picked all along, and now this is a really, really tough matchup for them. but I that's a really high quality game to me, and that's certainly, even if it's by, you know, we don't have many others that can compete with that one, it's good to still have that one.
Yeah, very true. That is very true, and George and I talked about it on the haberdashery scale. That might be a 1 versus 16 matchup between coaches there, as far as fashion goes. But you know, and listen, we talk about the Cinderellas, we talk about Power Five and smaller conferences, mid majors. How are they being represented? Are we still at a fair level? Are people being excluded? Is Middle Tennessee, you know, and St. Mary's or some of these teams the ones that are getting the short end of this deal, or how's the tournament stacking up now that we've seen some play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there were any. This wasn't the most egregious year when it comes to mid-major snubs, but St. Mary's was still a very, very good basketball team that proved it with the schedule it had, and they got ain't played nobody right out of the tournament and into the NIT, where they've been looking very solid still. But generally, I wrote a piece for SB Nation yesterday, just looking at. Because I can find a solution to anything in European soccer. Looking at the idea of coefficients is what they call it there, where, you know, based on recent performance in the tournament, the Premier League gets X number of spots in the tournament. La Liga gets Y number of spots in the tournament. I played a relatable system, create a point system, award points for, you know, wins in the NCAA tournament, wins in the NIT, et cetera. And basically what it came down to was, this year I think 5 of 36 at-large bids went to mid-major teams. And really, based on past performance in the tournament, that should have been closer to 10. So really, you know, the last 5 to get in, who was it, Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona State, UCLA, and Syracuse, they, you know, dump them, send them to the NIT, call up the top 5 mid-majors like St. Mary's, like Middle Tennessee, that also looked really good in the NIT before they lost their coach. And I don't think the tournament loses anything for that. I think you get a certain amount of fairness. You potentially get some more really fun mid-major stories if one of those teams makes a Sweet 16 run instead of Syracuse. But, yeah, I don't think anybody misses. You know, Trey Young scored 28 points in his one NCAA tournament game. Well, if nothing else, he could have scored that many in multiple NIT games, right, with them as a top seed. So I think that would be a way to install fairness into the system in a way that really doesn't hurt anybody, other than, in this case specifically, you know, OU fans, UCLA fans, et cetera.
Do those mid-majors, though, do they suddenly become like the fodder for the Dayton games? I mean, does the NCAA finally, is that when they finally make the move away from those 16 seeds and say, listen, the bottom 8, you know, at-large teams go to the final or the first 4, and we're just going to make that, and now we're letting in all these mid-majors. So they still only get the 5-ish, the half representation in the tourney, because half of them get knocked out in a first 4 type situation.
Yeah, you just assume that no matter what, for every, you know, step of progress in this regard, you know, there will be a half step backwards, and that would certainly be it. I don't know if they would change the first 4 to, you know, get rid of the 16 seed game, but at the very least, you know that all 4 of the teams in the 11 seed play-ins would be the mid majors, and the 10 seeds would all be mid majors and everything else. But I mean, that, you know, if nothing else, that probably backfires on the Power Conference 7 seeds that have to play these really good mid majors, and some of them would lose in the first round, and maybe a 2 seed would lose in the second. So, yeah, I mean, I understand that that's definitely how this would work, but I still think it's fairer than not doing it.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, and you know, I like the landscape of college basketball specifically for. I like the fact that mid-majors kind of, they almost have their own ecosystem, and the fact that the two never really meet. I mean, there's so few Power Five mid-major powerhouse, like tournament mid-major teams that meet up during the season. It's just kind of a weird separate ecosystem that all of a sudden kind of get dumped in the same fishbowl at the end. And I almost wish, almost like the SEC mandating, or, you know, that everybody has to play another Power Five team on their non-con schedule. You know, I wish there was some way for conferences to encourage more intermingling during the season, so that you get that fair representation at the end.
Well, sure, and one way to do that is just to take scheduling out of the school's hands altogether. something else I missed. Something else. Nice way to set the table there. Something else in the SB Nation piece that where I was talking about the coefficients. I also talked about like what if we had a scheduling committee. That's something that would work better in football than basketball, simply because of quantity. But so much of your postseason life is determined on who you played 3 months earlier in non-conference. And for a team like, you know, St. Mary's caught flack because they supposedly turned down a game against whoever, Nevada or something. But that's still not UCLA. And, you know, based on recent performance on the court, St. Mary's has been a top 30, 40, 50 team very consistently, more consistently than just about anybody in the Pac-12. So, yeah, if you had a committee set up to reward those teams that have been consistently good and have a St. Mary's play a home and home, actually bring a UCLA to their home court, I think, you know, they've earned it at this point. So you can certainly play around a lot with those ideas. If we seem to have accepted overall that, you know, Duke would never play a home and home with whichever, you know, Southern mid-major power. Well, take it out of their hands entirely, make them go, because the mid-majors in any tournament earn it. A lot of them earn it repeatedly, and then they have to fight the same scheduling battles the next year as they always have.
Yeah, Duke and VCU, you know, let's make it happen. And and the regional flair there, like you said, I mean, if St. Mary's decides to play UCLA, if Duke plays VCU, if you know, Kansas and Wichita State, heaven forbid, if you took that out of their hands and put that on the schedule, then all of a sudden, you know, those things becomes points of light on the schedule that people really dial into instead of just another ho-hum non-conference game.
And it probably benefits the Dukes of the world in a way, in that they have to face unique environments sometimes, or more often, not just like the, you know, a neutral court game at Madison Square Garden or something, but a truly unique, weird environment where they have to, you know, deal with different a different layout of the locker room, different amount of sideline space, et cetera. Those things probably don't hurt you in the end. You face a good team in a weird environment, and that, in theory, gets you more ready for March than the opposite would.
Well, as the FBI apocalypse approaches for the NCAA and anything else that's going on, is there some hope that out of the, it won't be the ashes, but out of some sort of tear down or internal burn up, is there hope that some of these reforms, maybe not these particular ones, but that come out the other side with a healthier product once it all kind of settles down? Is there really a hope for that, or does the entire nature just change and everything becomes monetized and you just move into kind of a whole new era?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything to do with amateurism, I've seen nothing to suggest that that's actually going to change, which is unfortunate because it's a very, very it's what we consider to be amateurism sort of expired a long time ago. But it does sound like, if nothing else, one of the things that we've seen now from multiple conferences, something that probably will change pretty quickly, is at least the idea of changing the one-and-done to where, you know, kind of a baseball-ish rule where you've got to either go pro out of high school or stay 2 years. That, you know, I it's not the best solution. It's not my first choice, but it would at least be a step in the right direction. And maybe it, some of the turnover, some of the competition for some of the bigger recruits from the shoe companies or whatever else, it'll probably, you know, limit some of that. I just, you know, we'd still be playing the same old game of pretending these kids can't make any money or don't make any money when we know they do. And so we'd continue this little charade on the side, but it would at least, you know, take us a half step in the right direction.
Yep, and as you pull one building block out, the rest of the foundation shudders a little bit, and the ripples are felt through football and basketball, and then into, you know, Title IX sports and across campuses. So, lots of things going on there, and probably best for another segment another day to really dive into that. But you see a lot of these problems, and you see a lot of solutions hanging out there, all under the landscape of this really interesting college tourney that's going on that we're in the middle of. So, Bill, can you stick and hang out for 1 second, and we'll come back after this break?
That'll work.
Okay, we're going to step aside for just 1 second, and we'll come right back with more Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. We'll take a little deeper dive into Mizzou stuff right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers, hour number two, rolling happily and merrily along. Bill Conley from Rock Am Nation is our guest. I'm Jay Sparks in the chair. George Young has stepped out. We have trying to figure out how we can be in 17 places at once between the two of us, and we're failing miserably on 15 of those counts. Bill, and as you looked at the way this season wound down, and I was hoping that this Wednesday was not going to be a postmortem for all things Mizzou winter sports, but as it is, that's where we're at. And just your takeaway from the winter sports at Mizzou and their perceptions going in and heights kind of to be scaled and where the end kind of came down to.
Well, I mean, from a perceptions perspective, obviously a good portion of perceptions are defined by the NCAA tournament, and either the men's team or the women's team really had their best effort there. It seemed like both of them kind of ran out of steam a week or two beforehand, which is unfortunate. But, I mean, you step back and look at the year as a whole. You look at the change in win totals, change in attendance totals. This was obviously an incredibly successful winter at Mizzou Arena overall. There's no way around that. Even if, you know, maybe we had starry eyes about maybe loftier goals, especially on the women's side, and it didn't really happen that way, that's the breaks of a single elimination tournament. It's still a very good season overall, and if nothing else for the women, especially with the loss to Florida Gulf Coast, a little extra motivation probably can't hurt heading into to Sophie Cunningham's senior year. A little bit more to play for now after this disappointment. That probably pays off in the end.
And I know not to be left out, we do like to talk Brian Smith here and hashtag Tiger Style. Were you in contact at all outside of Rock Am Nation with BST and Beef and the rest of the wrestling guys over there? And their quick takeaways, if you had any, from the wrestling team before we dive back into to men's and women's?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to my friend Seth, the Beef on Rock Am Nation, our wrestling expert, so to speak, and you know, like halfway through session one, he's like, oh man, this is a disaster. This is an outright disaster. And it was a terrible first session, just kind of doomed Mizzou to what ended up being sixth place overall. They rebounded well in the second session on that evening, but then, you know, kind of limped home from there. And it really was a disappointing performance. We've seen through the years, we've seen some overachieving performances from Mizzou, and we've seen some very ill-timed underachieving. This one was tough. The year they came in, obviously ranked number one and didn't hit that. That was very tough. But again, that's kind of a tournament setting. It takes on a personality of its own each year, and a couple of times that personality has not been favorable to Mizzou. So you just gotta, you know, lick your wounds. This is an incredible, again, you know, even though the last act wasn't all that great, going undefeated in duels without Jaden Cox, doing all the things they did, doesn't overshadow or doesn't get overshadowed by a single bad weekend, but it was definitely a bad weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as everything wound down, and let's go men's team first. You know, there were no legs, there were not enough bodies, and the Leonard Hamilton 12 guys in waves pounding was enough to take the legs out from Mizzou. How does that performance? You know, you grade them up for effort, you grade them up for grit, and all of those things, but when it came down to it, I mean, there was just, we were hard pressed to win that game, even with the talent that was on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that was from the opening tip, the first 3 or 4 minutes of that game, 5 or 6 minutes maybe. Both teams had kind of clearly defined their intentions. You know, Missouri comes out in the zone, basically, which announces that we are terrified of getting into foul trouble. We know we have no bench. We know that we've got to play things pretty carefully here if we're going to survive to the end. And Florida State just comes out in waves of substitutions, announcing that we are more athletic than you, and we have more guys than you who can see the court right now. And that really just, there were a couple of waves. Missouri goes up early, what, 7-1 or whatever, and then Florida State hits them with a wave, and Missouri battles back a little bit, and then a humongous wave to win the first half. And then, of course, after Missouri cuts it to six again in midway through the second half, there's one more wave to finish. So they just it really was kind of a swimming against the tide situation for Missouri. They handled it, and then they very much didn't, and then they did, and they very much didn't again. And, it, you know, maybe Konzo Martin comes out differently if he gets another shot, kind of coaches things a little differently early in the game. I don't think it makes a difference, though. Florida State was just athletic, and Missouri was going to have to make 70% of their three-pointers if they were going to make it a game.
Yeah, and the weird rising tide amongst fans that kind of the backlash, some national and some Tiger fans that picked up on it of questioning Konzo Martin's, the X, the O's, the that kind of idea. And it sat wrong with me. I thought about it. I kind of took it. It was almost like the Alonzo Mourning on the bench gif. I thought about it. I kind of, my eyebrows went up. I thought a little more about it. And then I came back down and said, I'm not going to buy into that. I'm not going to go with that narrative. And I mean, how does the coaching staff respond to that as moving forward and trying to show more chops on the X's and O's side of things? I don't even know where to go with that, but
no, just generally, I mean, that first of all, that little wave on Twitter during the game or whatever, that was started by Tom Fornelli, CBS Tom Fornelli, an Illinois grad who was having a lot of fun with Konzo Martin's defeat there. So I mean, that's where it all started, and it caused some navel gazing or whatever else. But I really try to avoid judging people by tournament success to begin with. Because Missouri played 33 games this season. One of them was a tournament game. And even Norm Stewart, who struggled a lot in the tournament, in the middle of a big round of upset losses in the late 80s, they also made the Sweet 16, whipped Texas or whoever that was in like 1989. So, and then they come back a few years later to make the Elite Eight. So, yeah, there are certainly some guys who seem to get their team to peak in March a little bit better, but so much of it is just noise that I it's the season as a whole that you should be judged on. And there's, we didn't really get the impression that Konzo Martin is the most amazing coach in the world, or he and his staff are the most amazing coaches in the world when it comes to last second plays. But they were a heck of a lot closer in a heck of a lot more games than they had been in recent history. So he gets nothing but an A grade from me here.
And from the personnel standpoint, Sam Snelling and Matt Harris providing great coverage on Rock'em Nation and breaking down the possibilities, especially Sam's last couple pieces. This becomes last year it was the Michael watch and then the Jonte watch, and this offseason going to do it again, but for a different reason. And just your gut feeling. I mean, come opening tip next year, 0, 1, or 2 Porters in uniform for the Mizzou Tigers?
I think in the end, like the smartest money is on 1, and then probably 0, and then probably 2. But there are odds on the table for all 3. That's what kind of makes this interesting. And of course, they have every right to take their time in making these decisions. But then Konzo Martin has other scholarships to spend if they when those decisions are made. So it's kind of an interesting timing game here. But no, I think the most likely scenario here is that Michael Porter, as we've been speculating for a while, Michael Porter Jr. leaves and Jonte comes back for one more year. Jonte is going to get a lot of feedback, obviously, from what we can tell so far. It's going to tell him he's borderline first round, maybe, maybe not. And that sounds about right to me. I think in the end, the simple fact that he could return and be a lottery pick next year prevails. But nothing's really going to – okay, I was going to say nothing was going to surprise me. If both come back, it'll surprise me at least a little bit. But overall, I mean, there are odds for each on the table right now.
Michael Porter Jr. returning / not returning. Obviously, we know the odds are on not returning, but as you said, odds on the table for returning. Does his decision actually affect the Courtney Ramey decision? I mean, if for some reason Michael all of a sudden surprises us and says he's coming back, I mean, does that lock in? I mean, is that something that Ramey's so dialed into that he's got his eyes on and that does it? Or him leaving just kind of it's business as usual and he makes his decision, per that family's nice methodical approach to recruiting?
Yeah, I would say if anything, it helps just because it'd be a more attractive team to play for and you'd have more assists and all that. I don't think it probably carries that much weight, though. This has been – the assumption has been that he's leaving for a long time. He's probably been recruited. Ramey has probably been recruited with that kind of in mind, that we're going to need some new playmakers because Michael's probably gone. So, that frame has been the one that they've probably been recruiting him with. And you know, maybe it gives a little extra boost. Maybe it takes him from, you know, X percent likely to sign with Mizzou to X plus 5% or something of that nature, but it's probably not going to have a humongous bearing. Overall, as long as there's a scholarship available, then the recruiting stays probably as it's going to, as it's been and as it will be for the coming weeks. Plus, there's a chance that he makes his decision before Michael does. So we'll see about that, too.
Right, exactly. So just, you know, this basketball team in flux, still recruiting going on, still grad transfers being auditioned, everything else going on. It was, you know, no rest for the weary for this coaching staff. But as they look at a fall return to action, you know, is this a trending up program? Is Konzo Martin successful at what he's doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the trend's going to be up. The biggest thing for next year is that the personality of the team is going to change significantly. Even if Jonte Porter comes back, you know, this is a team that more than anything else was able to shoot threes pretty well. The lion's share of those threes came from Cassius Robertson and Jordan Barnett. And so, you know, the personality of the offense especially, it has a chance to change quite a bit. The defense, too, really. The more, of the, quote-unquote, his recruits that come into Mizzou Arena, you know, the more his personality the defense might take on. But the offense is kind of an interesting thing this coming year. Like, for good or bad, it's going to change. And you know, the scoring options will change. The talent in terms of three-point shooting versus interior versus whatever else will change. There will be probably better point or I don't know about better point guard play, but point guards, there will be point guards on the roster, and there will probably be fewer three-point shooters. So it'll be interesting to see how that all balances out.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and I know we're probably up against it here with you and keeping you away from your Wednesday afternoon. But just quickly with this women's team, you mentioned the impetus of a little extra motivation, the first round loss after having won a game the previous year, and you know what does Robin Pinchton do with that motivation? I mean, how do these ladies get together and really, you know, find that next level? I mean, there's talent gaps at some points, but to move from 20, 25 to the 15, 17 range this year, you know, if the natural progression is 10 to 12 next year in the rankings, you know, where do they find the motivation and to get to that next level?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. I think it doesn't necessarily come from Robin Pinchton as much as it comes from the players themselves. I mean, they're the ones who are going to be kind of in charge of themselves a lot when it comes to off-season conditioning and culture building and everything else. But, I mean, there's going to be a very experienced core next year, even more than this year, I think. And that's going to be – that's a very good thing, obviously. But those senior leaders, the upperclassmen leaders, I should say, there's going to be a lot of them, and there's going to be a lot of pressure because Sophie Cunningham and some others are – it's their last year. And so – it just all comes down to, you know, they're probably going to put more pressure on themselves. They're probably going to work a little bit harder in the off season, and that's all good. But how you respond to that pressure is what counts. And for every good example or a couple of good examples of that senior leadership and that pressure, there's an alternative version. And we'll have to see how they respond. I assume they'll respond pretty well. They really have grown in maturity through the years, even if this one, you know, this season kind of ended 2 weeks earlier than we would have preferred, at least in terms of like when their level of play started dropping off. It was about 2 weeks before the tournament. But, you know, we'll see. They will have a brand new set of challenges to deal with, both in terms of motivation and pressure, and we'll see how they handle it.
Yep. A lot of roster overhaul on both teams, even though it's just a couple seniors leaving from this Mizzou ladies team. The Kayla Michael and Jordan Frerich, both kind of post presences. So a lot of minutes to be made up there. So we will keep our eye on that. Bill Conley from Rock'em Nation, Wednesday afternoon, not complete without talking to him. So we appreciate the time, Bill, and appreciate going around the national look and the Mizzou look. And we'll let you get back to your regularly scheduled Wednesday.
Sounds good.
All right. Bill Conley from Rock'em Nation. I am Jay Sparks on The Closers. More of Hour 2 will be coming up right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here. As we come through the saloon doors...
Hold on, let me kick this tumbleweed off the back of my Spurs here.
You know, sometimes as you're rolling through, you're just like, oh, wait a minute, that's right, I got to grab some of this, and
ding.
Let me know, it's... That's much better.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, we can officially welcome you back to the Closers. Alongside Jay Sparks, I'm George Young. 442-8255 is the phone number. 442-8255. And you guys left off, one, covering 17 different things. We managed to nail two of them because we had basketball availability today as well, as at the same time as all this stuff is going on. So we managed to get some of that, and you guys left off at a great spot talking about women's basketball, because this is where this segment is going to be, and then we'll take a quick little step aside and wrap things up. Ann Rogers, by the way, from PowerMizzou.com, will join us tomorrow for a more in-depth look on the, you know, the, we're going to unzip the body bag one last time before we slide it into the locker.
Okay.
And put the lock on it, throw the key away.
Yeah.
So, with that, head coach Robin Pinchton and Sophie Cunningham met the media earlier this afternoon. And here is head coach Robin, part of her opening statement. The whole thing will be up. Put the whole thing up on the podcast for your listening pleasure. But here's Robin Pinchton, her opening statement.
We beat two top 11 teams. I don't think that's been done since the early 80s. You know, we had 11,000 fans at one of our games this year. We had the highest seed, I think, since the early 80s in the NCAA tournament. So much to be excited about. Unfortunately, we had a tough loss at the end. And we certainly were disappointed, but not disappointed in the season.
And she's really trying to take the snapshot, the whole picture, the painting, if you will, not focusing in on one aspect, one little corner of the painting.
Right.
And go, wow, brushstrokes are kind of uneven there. So if you step back from the season, yeah, she's right. This was a really good season from start to, right before the SEC tournament. Maybe that first win against Ole Miss. But when you start looking, when you kind of crack the nut a little bit on this one, you look at different aspects of this season and go, man, if only, LSU game at home. If only. You know, that was a game that Sophie Cunningham missed. Amber Smith had a career night on that one. She were over 30 points in that game.
But it wasn't enough.
And if only, if you win that game, does that push you into hosting?
I mean, even as far back as Western Kentucky to open the season.
Yeah, the Hilltoppers.
I mean, you know, those are missed opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the Mizzou Athletics MO, as fans like to obviously wring their hands and gnash their teeth about, is all about the missed opportunity.
Right.
It's always Mizzou gets set up for something, and then the missed opportunity occurs.
Yeah. Lucy and Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see it again and again and again. And you don't want to buy into that narrative. You don't want to perpetuate that narrative. There's growth. There's positives. There's a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you put it, you know, when everything comes out,
When you run it through the prism of the expectations versus the accomplishment, you are left a little bit wanting as a fan base, because you realize you look at this team and you go, man, there were so many opportunities. You know, and one of the things that Coach Pinchon talked about today was, you know, listen, you knocked off a couple of number 10 teams. You had over 11,000 at one of your games. The Tennessee game, they won that one. You knocked off South Carolina at home. And those are good moments. But with this team right now, especially after winning two games in the NCAA, or winning a game in the NCAA tournament last year, and this year falling in that first one, granted, Florida Gulf Coast was a good team. Yeah, they were a 12 seed, but they were a 30-win team and on a 10-game win streak, having won 20 of their last 21 games.
Yes.
And before being upended by Stanford by 20 to close out on that Monday. But, yeah, you do look at this team and you go, man, the possibilities were there. There were so many opportunities to grow out and grab, and they weren't able to get them. You look at some of those box scores, you look at some of the play-by-play, and you realize that you're so close fourth quarter, and you didn't get it done. And then you can go back in that game, and you can look at it and go, wow, habitually quiet third quarters for this team over the course of a year. Habitually double-digit turnovers for the course of the year for this team, and they managed to adapt to them, but the better the competition, the more times those turnovers became free possession points for the other team. So, yeah, there are some things, but let's see. We move on from the yes.
No, I was just going to say, it's you know, if you go out and you get a nice, you're out for dessert somewhere, and you're at a nice restaurant, you get a nice dessert, and it's set up, and it's all stacked up, and it's got the curly chocolate shavings, and it's got, you know, all the truffle. It's all beautiful, right?
Yeah, okay.
That's all well and good. Mm-hmm. You're out, you're having dessert. But if there's a dirty plate, do you remember the dessert? Or what do you talk about when you go with your friends after that?
Oh, the dirty plate.
And that's the problem with this Missouri Tiger season was so many people are going to remember the dirty plate and not the really nice food piled upon the plate.
Nice little tiramisu.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, and you just it's the human nature element of the fans, but that's what's going to be remembered.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to all of that, there was also a lot of the noise around this team. The aggressiveness, the back and forth between South Carolina in Missouri that wasn't good. Just the general thought that, and that not from people within the organization, within the university, but people on the outside looking in with the that's not a good look type thing. They're an aggressive team. They push the envelope. They do. And quite frankly, if this was a men's team and they played like that, the narrative would be different. The narrative would be, wow, that's an aggressive team. They go out there. Man, that is team floor burn.
West Virginia.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
They foul a lot.
Because it's a, but they're not. Yes. And they do.
Right.
But Missouri, because it's a woman's team and they're much more genteel, they're dirty. They're overly aggressive. They don't play the game the right way. So that's part of the narrative, unfortunately, that's developed for this team. And the more you talk about that with the coaching staff and with Coach Pinchton and the players, this is going to be the party line. Because I asked that question today of Coach about all the outside noise, making it difficult to focus on the positives for this team.
Right.
And here's her answer.
Well, I hope the noise is really positive. I don't foul a lot of things, but I don't know how it couldn't be after you win 24 games and you get the highest seed that you've ever had and you win at the rate that we won in a tough, tough league. So, you know, I guess with success comes higher expectations. Nobody has higher expectations for this program than I do. I guarantee you that. It's really unfortunate if we're not focused on all the positives that these young ladies were able to accomplish this year.
And that's going to be the narrative going forward. And as far as the discussion, I mean, we'll try it again because it's part of it is a story. It is something that bears following. But it's that's going to be the response from the team and from the coaching staff.
Right.
That listen, it's about the pilot. We don't care about the other stuff. We don't care. But at some point, you kind of have to, because it does impact how you play the game. It does impact who's on that floor as the game is winding down. It does impact because the perception that has been created is there. And that can be hard. That can be very, very difficult to undo.
Oh, and that's just it. Is you can't erase a narrative.
Right.
You can dispel a narrative over time, but you cannot delete or erase a narrative. The narrative exists, and it's there.
Yeah, so it's going to be a little bit difficult. I think this is Sophie talking about, it might be her thumb. We're going to give this a whirl because they didn't label these.
So should you anticipate any more additions?
That's a recruiting question. To answer the question about the thumb, I did ask about that earlier today. She said, oh, no, it's fine. And she waggled it, you know.
Sure.
I was like, that's the same thing you said after the Kentucky game. So. And we are efforting to get her on the program here in the next couple of weeks. Remember, we get spring break coming up next week. So a lot of things will go silent. Especially the beeping of horns on campus. But and there'll be more parking downtown, by the way, which is always good. So that's always nice. By the way, before I get too far afield here. I know we got to take a quick little break, but got a nice little note today from Columbia College.
Yeah.
From Drew Grisella, and a piece of the AMC tournament championship net.
Whoa! Look at that.
And I find out today that this is your second piece of net.
Yes,
young fella.
Yes, it is. As a freshman in college. So, they let me
as special as I thought it was going to be.
Well, as a freshman in college, the senior point guard.
Yeah,
they had me up. Okay. They had me climb the ladder and handed me the silver scissors, and I got to cut a piece of net down after an AMC championship back then.
Was it a Warner ladder moment? Or just whatever.
I wasn't really paying attention to the brand of ladder.
Just as long as it didn't collapse onto you,
right?
Okay, and you didn't stab. You didn't run up the ladder with the scissors, right? Because can't run. With scissors.
I held them properly.
Okay.
I mean, blades down in
blades
my fist.
Blades down in your fist. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you were very diligent and careful. Somebody was spotting you.
Very much so.
All right. Excellent. So, yeah. But thanks to Drew Grisella for sending that little piece of net. Really do appreciate that. We'll try to figure out how to get that taken care of so it doesn't get swiped.
Yes.
So, anyway. All right. We're going to be back. We're going to wrap things up as a lot of things are wrapping up around on the Diamonds as well, so we'll get you caught up with that.
It's The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers. Alongside Jay Sparks, I'm George Young. Thanks to our guest today, Gabe Yarman from PowerMizzou.com. Also, Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. And tomorrow, Ann Rogers from PowerMizzou.com will be by with us. We'll talk more women's basketball as we kind of put a bow on this season and slide it away until recruiting stuff is announced. By the way, that is going to be mid-part of April. It is actually April 11th when the early signing period begins for basketball. So Coach Pinchton today said, yes, they do intend on adding more people.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that as well with Ann. Diamond stuff today. Missouri softball taking game number one of a doubleheader against SEMO down at Cape Girardeau. Final score 10-2. That thing was over after five innings. And the picking up, let's see, Eli Daniel for the Tigers was the starter for tonight, for the first game. And the second game will start here in about 10 or 15 minutes or so. Meanwhile, Missouri Tiger baseball, this thing might very well end up in a football score. But right now, top five, it is 6-4 in favor of the Missouri Tigers. And as I hit my hand on the table, we now hit the middle of the fifth. It's 6-4.
Okay.
So the Lions score right now 4-8-2 with six left on for Arkansas State. Missouri 6-4-0 with six left on. So there you go. Jay Sparks, thank you, man. Appreciate everything.
Yeah, of course.
And thanks for helping man the other half of our double-dip duty here today.
Got to make it work.
Oh, man, don't we ever. All right, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Until then, as always, please be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.